Who's Talking with DZ Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of shrimp and grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned to the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin, our friend Emil Kang, whom we like to kiddingly call the Art Czar.
One of these days, DG.
Who's the executive director of the arts, is stretching us and helping us in Chapel Hill to have the opportunity to see arts productions of events that just are ones which would not be available to us if it weren't for Emil Kang and for the revitalized Memorial Hall. We've talked about some of them before. Coming up at the end of this week is an incredibly interesting and provocative production by a group of Vietnamese dancers. And I've asked Emil to come and talk to us about it, why we ought to see it. And he said, I don't have all the answers, so I've brought my colleague, Rivka Eisner. Welcome, Rivka, and welcome, Emil.
Thank you, DG.
Emil, again, tell us, I've pushed you on this, tell us what this is first, in great detail what this is, and then how you happen to
In great detail. It is a dance work set and in a very minimalist way that uses a core of young dancers from the National Ballet of Vietnam, and it's supported by live musicians who perform both traditional Vietnamese music and contemporary interpretations of that tradition. And it's a very, on one hand, very simple and simply set work, and yet on the other hand, it's very complicated. What does that mean? There are a number of dancers, and in very much in contrast with Nine Hills, One Valley that we talked about last time, DG, that work was based on solely on the one director, Ratan Thiam's vision of that work, and every movement, every sound was choreographed by him, and it really was a reflection of him. For this work by the French Vietnamese choreographer Ea Sola, and her vision, she really is presenting the work, and her vision of it is very different in one sense, that she allows her dancers to actually express themselves individually, and yet she puts that into a much larger framework that she presents. And I'll ask Rivka to go into that in a little bit. But we discovered this work in a conversation that I was having with some folks involved with the National Dance Project, which is a nationwide endeavor to present more dance from all around the world in America. It's funded by the New England Foundation for the Arts, and a lot of my colleagues in the presenting field, especially in colleges and universities, are on that advisory committee. And as I was talking with them, it was clear that Ea Sola and her company stood out from among the rest. The difficulty with this work is that they weren't planning on touring it this current year, and were planning on touring it in 2007-08. And I saw that as a great opportunity, an opportunity to jump in and to, again, like we want to build, is a reputation for getting out of the gates first. And so we brought them to Chapel Hill, and this is their only stop in the United States.
This is the name of this production is Drought and Rain Volume 2.
Right.
And this is the U.S. premiere.
That's right.
So, Emil, is this the first time since you've been here, or that anybody knows that we've had an international production of this caliber in which we have in Chapel Hill the U.S. premiere?
No, this is it. And I think the premieres really are very, very, very it's very prestigious for us to be able to be involved in presenting new work. Obviously, because it's new work, it's an experiment. Yeah. And we're not sure how well it will go over, but it's the courage to present this new work that we think is important and that has context with our own community, and also is among the best in the particular art form, that are the reasons why we present it. We have many of our colleagues from the University of Michigan, Berkeley, Illinois, that are coming to attend this performance this week because they want to present it next year. And of course, we'll have moved on by then.
This is how can you make a decision like this without seeing the work?
That's a really good question. And in most cases, whether the work is based in America or outside, we like to see it first. Not all presenters have that philosophy. Many are successfully presenting and doing it simply by opening a phone book, the figurative artist phone book. And, we, of course, have knowledge of some people like Tony Bennett, Itzhak Perlman. We don't need to go see them. We know who they are. We know what they'll do. Yo-Yo Ma. We know they'll present well. And even some cases like Alvin Ailey, Mark Morris, established artists.
And D.G. Martin.
And D.G. Martin, that's right, who, of course, performed in another avant-garde work of ours last year by Carl Hancock Rux.
Well, I was trying to lead you to explain that Rivka Eisner, who's our other guest, has seen this production.
Yes. You know, again, in looking at this work, we thought, how better to learn about this work than to find a faculty member or a grad student who had academic interest in Vietnam to go visit and see, attend the work, because it was being presented in a festival in a town called Hue. And thanks to Peter Kaklanis, who is the head of the University Center on International Studies and Associate Provost for International Affairs, I think that's his title. Thanks to him, he introduced us to Rivka Eisner, who mentioned to me that she was going to be in Ho Chi Minh City this past summer, and that she had research interest in this area, in areas related to Vietnamese women in particular, and that she might be willing to consider traveling to Hue, which is, about a two-hour flight? Is that right?
One hour.
1 hour flight, to attend this performance. And so we arranged for her to attend the work in Hue and also to interview Aya Sola. After that, she actually presented her views and reflections in an essay that we published that's in our current program book. For those of you who haven't read it, I encourage you to. It's also available on our website, carolinaperformingarts.org. And if you click the Aya Sola link, it'll go right to her article. It is a beautifully written piece that really gives you a flavor of Vietnam. What we thought would be great was that if we could share even a little bit of the context of seeing that work, that it would be better than nothing. But what better way than to present a UNC scholar in actually interpreting his or her own work? And we were blessed with having someone like Rivka. And I was just telling her earlier, I felt so guilty for getting her to do so many things, but she's the sole link that we have to Aya Sola and her work, and in some cases to Vietnam.
Well, Rivka, tell us a little bit about your experience in Vietnam and in seeing this work and interviewing is it dance director, dance
choreographer.
Choreographer.
Yeah.
What did you expect, and what did you learn, and what did you see?
Well, I was very grateful to have the opportunity to go, not only see the work at the Hue Festival, but also to have the opportunity to talk with this world-renowned artist, which I would not have had the chance to do if not for Emil and for UNC's name sort of backing me. But I had been doing a oral history and ethnographic project in Ho Chi Minh City, which is formerly Saigon in the south of Vietnam.
Some of us still call it Saigon.
Yeah, and actually some Vietnamese Americans in Vietnam call it Saigon too. And the center of the city is still Saigon. So
you're in Ho Chi Minh City, mm-hmm. Doing work on your academic area,
yeah,
that involves oral history of modern women in Vietnam?
Well, Vietnamese women veterans, actually. So a lot of the work that I'm doing is with memory and memory of war and violence and sort of the way in which these things in the past, this damage in the past, continues to reverberate in very material ways within the present, in the present in Vietnam, but also, you know, transnationally.
So your expertise is not in dance, but it is in the arena of what this dance troupe deals with in its dance.
I have a particular interest in performance, because the way I'm looking at narratives and stories is by seeing them as a kind of performance of the past.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I want you all both to describe as vividly as you will,
okay,
what those of us who are going to come on Thursday or Friday night at Memorial Hall are going to see. My guests are Emil Kang and Rivka Eisner. talking about an upcoming production at Memorial Hall. We'll be right back.
East-West Partners, the developers of Meadowmont, would like you to know that a limited number of homes are still available. What exactly do we mean by limited? A few, more than one or two, not a lot. Which means for a limited time, emphasis on limited, you have limited opportunities to live, work, play, shop, dine, even retire in Meadowmont. Now, assuming you completely understand the limited part, visit Meadowmont.com today. Meadowmont.com. Because while supplies are limited, demand is not.
Howdy, partner. It's that time of year again. Time for the yearly showdown between you and your gutters. You have to get up there on the roof, risking life and limb to face off with your nemesis, cluttered gutters. This year, you can win the final showdown and never deal with gutter clutter again. Eliminate the need to clean clogged, grimy gutters by having me install the Leaves Out gutter cover system. I'm Charlie Quayle with Gutter Solutions, here to tell you that Leaves Out is the proven solid aluminum gutter cover that's guaranteed to stop gutter clutter. The secret is that Leaves Out features one of the industry's most innovative designs. Best of all, Leaves Out works with your existing gutters. Call Gutter Solutions today for more information about all of our services, 967-7979, or visit our website at chimneysplusgutters.com. Be quick on the draw. Stop gutter clutter with Leaves Out.
Who's Talking with D.C. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin visiting with Emil Kang. Emil Kang is talking about another wonderful production that he has brought to us that will be at Memorial Hall this Thursday and Friday. It's called Drought and Rain, Volume 2. It's the United States premiere of this work by a Vietnamese or French Vietnamese producer, choreographic.
Choreographer.
He's just a block. Iasola. And Emil's given us the background. Rivka has seen the production. And I want you all maybe to have a conversation between yourselves about what excites you about this work and what people who go to see this production can will see and will enjoy. What thrilled you about the production, Rivka?
Well, I guess what's going to be interesting to see also is the difference or... to notice some of the differences between the performance as I saw it in Hue and how it will be, and the difference in audience in Memorial Hall. In Hue, the festival was outside in the Vietnamese version of the Forbidden City, essentially. So it was in these kind of, these 300-year-old ruins.
The historic imperial capital of Vietnam.
That's right. And that's also the site of some particularly devastating fighting during...
what they called the American... what we call the...
the American War there, us, the Vietnam War here. Yeah, so a lot of the fighting actually took place in that very area where the performances for the festival were being staged. And so when I was walking through the field to this sort of makeshift set of bleachers and stage, I couldn't help but really be sensing the layers of memory and history that were taking place, that this was a performance about the memory of war.
What is the performance about, and what is it? What are we going to see?
Well, it's a piece of contemporary dance, so it's not going to be telling you necessarily a linear story, but it has associative meanings, so it's supposed to evoke and provoke feelings, thoughts, memories,
How
questions.
How does it do that?
Well, as Emil, I think, said, the stage is very sparse. It has The lighting is pale, and there are hardly any other things on the stage. On the side, there's...
Can I just add, it's a white Marley. A Marley is a dance floor that we add on top of the stage, and a white scrim behind it, so the audience only sees white.
Yeah, at first.
Pure, sheer white.
And some pale colors at first, yeah. Some blues and things.
So this is the setting, and right. It will not shock you. It'll be a sparse setting. What about the dancers themselves? Are they all equally sparse in terms of costumes, or do they show great Vietnamese-style costuming?
No, they're actually wearing just very modern clothes. Modern Western clothes. The women are all in black, and the men are in, they have more muted colors that they're wearing, but T-shirts and, you know, lightweight pants.
My staff thought the men were wearing pajamas.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. It's not any sort of traditional outfit at all. Yeah. This is a piece that is very modern, and the choreographer was sort of adamant about, when she was telling me about it, that this is a piece that's for and about and made by the post-war generation of young Vietnamese.
Well, how do you know this is Vietnamese? Does the music give you a clue that it's of Vietnamese origin?
Yeah, the music, there's drumming. The drummers are set on the side, and so are the singers. And the music and the vocal work is based on traditional art forms, Vietnamese art forms, traditional chao theater, which is a kind of popular theater from Vietnam. But as Emil said, the music is also contemporary. It's composed by someone who studied these classical forms, but who is really engaging with modern
music. It's contemporary,
as well.
But is it westernized Vietnamese music?
It's hard to say if it's westernized.
It's very accessible.
Yes.
Except for maybe one segment. I've seen a DVD excerpt of the work, which is why I feel like I can even sit here today. except for one excerpt where a vocalist just sends out a beautiful melodic line that might be considered in some respects dissonant.
Yeah.
The rest of it is very much about rhythm and pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very straightforward in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why am I going to want to come see this? Why am I? I mean, what? And not let's leave the politics of the piece out of it, but from an artist presentation standpoint, when I go home, what am I going to talk to people at the next cocktail party about?
Well, in some respects, DG, I have to say that it's impossible to remove the political part out of this. And I'm guessing, even though I have yet to meet ASOLA, but I am at 4 o'clock, is that ASOLA would agree with me, that it's an inextricably linked part of her work. Now, if you want to reduce it to its purest form, it is contemporary dance. Dance where she gives freedom of movement to each of her dancers, which is unusual. Mm-hmm. So each of the movements by each of the dancers is very individual. But I think in that sense, she's trying to portray these dancers as individual human beings, as people with their own individual feelings. Quasi-portraits that are being held and used by each of these dancers of individuals from around the world who've died in some sort of conflict one way or another. And they play an important role in this work as well.
Yeah.
And so, and I think Rivka alluded to the fact that women were wearing all black and the men were wearing Western clothes, very casual wear. Rivka and I talked about this in my freshman seminar about the meaning of the fact that the women were all in black, and not only that, but their hair was, in almost all the cases, covering their faces, so you could barely see their faces. Mm-hmm. And the men were, of course, just typically exposed and dancing around. And that Rivka, I'm not sure if it was you who mentioned it, or someone else did, could it be just referring to the traditional patriarchal dominance in that society, and that women didn't have as much of a voice as men do or did. Just trying to explain the visual components of the work itself before going into anything deeper than that. In a very simple sense, if you are interested in dance or interested in work from other countries, I would encourage audiences to come. It is, in one sense, though, very different from Nine Hills in that it is contemporary. So people shouldn't expect a museum piece based on Vietnamese culture.
Right, that's right.
And this is a world culture. This is intended to be more international rather than just Vietnamese.
Yes.
That's a question.
Even more so than Nine Hills, which really spoke literally to Manipuri culture and then tried to leap forward to the future. This is purely about the future and the present and the future. But hearkening a little bit back to the past, this is volume two. I should just make clear, there was a volume one that came to America about 6 years ago. And so the visit to Chapel Hill isn't the first visit by this company to America. It will be the only visit this year. And Drought and Rain volume one is when Ayasola actually went to the rice paddies and selected women, older women who were working in the rice paddies who've had absolutely no experience in dance, so that she could actually express through her work actual feelings of by women who were just expressing themselves. And so that was really about remembering the past, and now this is much more about this sort of leap to the future and what this generation will think about.
Well, let's take a break. Talking to Emil Kang and Rivka Eisner about the upcoming production in Memorial Hall of Drought and Rain, Volume 2. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for the best brunch in town, look no further. Crook's Corner is serving up everything from the delicious crab asparagus omelet to the oyster po' boy. For traditionalists, there are buttermilk biscuits with sausage gravy or light fluffy pancakes served with warm maple syrup. Always fresh and delicious. Look no further for the best brunch around. Y'all come now. Crook's Corner serving Sunday brunch from 10:30 to 2 under the pig at 610 West Franklin.
Did you know that your probability of needing auto insurance in your lifetime is 1 in 7? Bet you thought it was higher. Did you know your chances of actually using your homeowner's insurance are 1 in 20? Sounds about right. Well, it might surprise you to know that your chances of needing to make a disability claim before the age of 65 are 1 in 3. Wow. Now you're thinking to yourself, gosh, do I have disability insurance? And if I do, what does it pay? How will I pay my mortgage payment if I'm not able to work? Check with your insurance agency. Don't wait until it is too late. Or call High & Rubish Insurance. High & Rubish offers a free insurance review to make sure that you have the coverage you need. Many reviews result in no change in coverage, so wouldn't it be nice to be sure? You have nothing to lose and everything to gain by calling High & Rubish Insurance today for your free insurance review. Call 913-1144. That's 913-1144 or stop by 6015 Farrington Road in Chapel Hill. High & Rubish Insurance, when you need to be sure.
Who's Talking with DZ Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. At Memorial Hall, the Executive Director of the Arts, Emil Kang, is going to be bringing us another production, which I call this your avant-garde series. This is the place where you, if you want to be ahead of the game, these are the productions you want to see. And this is a production that comes from Vietnam. Rivka Eisner has seen the production, Drought and Rain, Volume 2. And you all are talking about this woman who's associated with the production named Ayasola,
right?
As if she were a goddess. Now, I've never heard of her before. So why? Is it if I go to this production and come back and I go to New York and go to a cocktail party and say, well, you know, we had this production with E.O. Solo. Am I going to get some points? Are people going to know?
I think so. For those people who are
The New Yorker.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially those who are globally minded or dance oriented.
Well, who is she?
In many ways, I would offer, and Rivka, you can feel free to disagree, but I would offer that this work actually, in some senses, could be seen as less about her than Nine Hills was about Ratan Tiam.
Yeah.
Well, I do want you to tell me about her. And I get the point that she has been less imposing of her own personal ideas and given more freedom than was available in Nine Hills. But nevertheless, is she an important personality, and if so, why?
She is definitely a very important choreographer in the world today. Her work is unique in that there aren't that many Vietnamese voices that are considered important around the world, Vietnamese artistic, contemporary artistic voices. And so she has actually met with some great success in Europe in particular with her work, which has allowed her to do even more and to do better work. And so I think in that sense, she's new to America, but I think she is less new to the audiences in Europe.
Right.
In particular,
well,
in France.
To me, it says that she is French Vietnamese.
Right.
What's all that about?
So she's from the south of Vietnam. Her family was, and during the late 70s and early 80s, many, many thousands, maybe even a million or so, Vietnamese left South Vietnam. Right before the war was coming to an end or right after. And so her family was one of those who chose to leave and had to flee Vietnam. And I believe that they left in the late 70s, maybe 78. And her family, a lot of these Vietnamese people who are leaving the South either went to the U.S. or to France. Those were two of
arguably colonial powers.
Right, had connections with Vietnam.
So her family possibly was not supportive of the revolution.
Right, I don't know. You know, I wasn't... Yeah. I did ask her about some of her history, but I don't know what caused her family to have to leave. It could have been so many different things. But what's interesting is that she decided to come back to Vietnam. And she came back very early, as when Vietnam started letting tourists and their overseas Vietnamese relatives, expats or diasporic Vietnamese populations come back to the country. She was there. She went back, I think, in 94.
Well, as someone who's interested in politics and all of this, it interested me, and the question arose, she came back to Vietnam, I guess first as a visitor because she had severed her connections with Vietnam, but then is she now a permanent resident of Vietnam and a citizen, or does she keep her protection of her French citizenship?
Well, I think she's... she's probably a French citizen, but I know that she's been living in Hanoi for, I think that's really been her base since 94. She's traveled a lot in Europe and put on these productions and traveled with these older women rice farmers, was the first Drought and Rain around Europe and the U.S., but that Hanoi in Vietnam is where she bases herself and wants to do dance work. She wants to be working there in particular.
How does she get along with it, since her family obviously were not communists, they wanted to get away from it, and now she's living under a communist regime and making and doing performances that apparently meet the approval of the reigning powers. How do her politics fit with the government's politics? Can you do anything there without being an agent of the government?
Definitely. I think, you know, she's probably had particular difficulties doing the kind of work she wants to do because of governmental pressures, but she's also probably been able to stretch the boundaries in certain ways because she's you know, a French citizen, and so she doesn't have to put so much at risk by taking some steps, you know, in directions that for others, you know, it would be too dangerous.
So you know, DG, to that point, I think just an illustration. In the Hui Festival program, when I looked it up first, I couldn't find her work, and that was because it was listed under international work not under Vietnamese work. And so I think that might speak to what Rivka is saying about her freedom to express herself more freely maybe than others might be able to, because she is in some cases considered international.
Yeah. So she kind of has one foot in one place and one foot in the other, right?
So those of us interested in politics ought to come see this just to see how in the dynamics of today's Vietnam,
right,
these remarkable adjustments are being made, similar to those that are happening in China as we watch it primarily in the commercial area. But in Vietnam, you see
a lot is changing.
The change coming back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rivka, I ask you, and Emil, this before. Is she good looking?
She's very beautiful and elegant and has very long, dark hair and lithe, graceful movement of her.
DJ, I plead the fifth in case Lisa's listening.
Well, you obviously have good taste yourself. I guess it's not, I might get censured for asking this in the political climate of today's America. You're not supposed to go in that direction. But nevertheless, in the days in which we were engaged in Vietnam, tragically, of course, but one of the things that we learned were that the Vietnamese women were incredibly beautiful, and particularly when they dressed up in the, you know, in the dress-up clothes that Vietnamese wore.
Well, you won't see any of that in this production.
Not any of that. But what about, you know, what about with Ia Solum? When you met with her, was she glamorous or just easygoing? Did she wear the communist-style pajama clothes, or what?
No,
was
she's, you know, she's very.
I'm guessing I see more like a Chanel wearing Sophia Loren type.
Really?
That's what I'm. Again, I haven't met her yet, but I envision based on what Rivka said
Rivka was with her in Hue in Vietnam, where I'm learning about this, but I mean where you would expect that dress would be modest in accordance with sort of the idea of the state that we are not capitalist and you know showing off and all that. I mean, that changing too?
It's complicated, but a lot of schoolgirls will still wear the traditional ao yai dress of Vietnam, but most people are wearing very, very trendy Western style clothes, and certainly Ia Sola was very, you know, also in modern dress, really.
Rivka, tell me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine, DG knows I was in China for 3 weeks earlier last month, and I'm sure there's an affluent class of Vietnamese locals there who are noticeable. So I think in some cases, to answer your question, I would imagine that it depends where you are in terms of how they will dress. But like in downtown Shanghai or Beijing, you could feel like you're in Paris, London.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not suggesting that
Hue probably not the same, not as much as Ho Chi Minh City and Hanoi are very hip,
cosmopolitan
places.
The further south you go, the further into the old. Mm-hmm. Is that right? I mean, Hanoi is more
the northern capital,
stoic and communist, and then you come to Hue and then down to Saigon. It loosens up. Is that right, or have I got the wrong direction?
Yes and no. I mean, this is some of the way in which people outside of Vietnam and within Vietnam might describe it. Certainly, Hanoi is the center of, or is called the center of, you know, tradition and the center of government. And Hue is known as the sort of old capital and the center of Vietnamese Buddhism. And the south, Ho Chi Minh City, because it has been such a part of colonial relations with the French, it's always been a very cosmopolitan place within Southeast Asia, and then with colonization and then
like,
with Americans.
Beijing.
Right. So it's a very
Beijing,
it's
the cap, like Beijing and Hanoi are kind of the capital where the ruling arm is closer.
Yeah, but you'd probably be surprised now going to Hanoi. You'll see, you know, high fashion, and you'll see a real mix of the old and the new and everything in between.
Well, let me ask you this. Sorry for just roaming a little bit off the subject of
fine.
The production,
okay.
but in terms of, you're bringing us a French-Vietnamese woman and her troupe of dancers to do a modern dance performance with the political anti-war or memory of war and the consequences of war theme that might intersect with some of the things we're worrying about here.
Yeah.
But now, this comes from Vietnam, Vietnamese performers, and you've talked to us about the complexity of doing art, in a provocative art in Vietnam, particularly contemporary dance, as it intersects with communist ideas about the appropriateness of all this. And you said she just gets more leeway because she's French.
Well, right, I now, said she might get more leeway sometimes and then have more difficulty other times. But I guess what you're getting at is the issue that within Vietnam, there is all cultural productions were supposed to support party ideologies,
right?
They were supposed
Understandably,
yeah, it was supposed to be art for the people. Not just art for art's sake, but art that had a social function and that had a very clear directive that was the directive that the party wanted.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people in the United States who feel the same
way. So to do political art that's not following the party line is, you know, more risky and is more difficult to do and is happening more and more in Vietnam. But certainly Iasola and these young dancers are doing something that is not prevalent. You know, this is a real emerging kind of contemporary work for Vietnam.
Well, Emile Kang has difficulty, I mean, it has a challenge, not difficulties, but it has a challenge in terms of funding the arts program, as we do all over this country, with incredible resources and without that kind of tradition of having the government have to approve point by point every production.
Right.
And nevertheless, we have a struggle supporting it financially. How does a woman in Vietnam who is off the party's, off the
support
system in a country which is not as wealthy as we are, certainly, and not quite as poor as it used to be, how can you make it financially? Is she independently wealthy, or where
no,
does the money
I mean,
come from?
I think she's gotten worldwide foundation grants for dance, and certainly her connections with Europe and being French, she was able to connect with dance communities and dance financing there. And in Vietnam, you can live, you know, she can live
Fairly well
on fairly little.
As opposed to in Paris.
Well, talking about the financial thing, Emile Kang, if this is the single production, this is the premier production of Drought and Rain Volume 2 in the United States, and you're bringing her here, the airplane tickets are not inexpensive, and the cost of bringing a troupe of Vietnamese dancers can't be insubstantial. How do you pay for this?
Typically, there's a tour that's arranged for that reason, to defray the costs and to spread it around. And the fee, however, you would pay, it wouldn't change. So that is not impacted by this U.S. premiere. The things that are impacted to us are, of course, travel costs, as you rightly pointed out. And we're fortunate in that they got some support from the government to come over here.
From
the Vietnamese government. As well as some local funding in America. But I have to admit, you know, we are paying a little bit more than we otherwise would have if it was part of a tour. But again, this is a case where we believe that the importance of the work makes it important enough for us to actually take on that cost.
Let's take a quick break. We're talking about a production that will be at Memorial Hall this Thursday and Friday evenings. It's called Drought and Rain Volume 2. It's the U.S. premiere, and we'll be talking to Emile Kang and Rivka Eisner after this short break.
WCHL 1360. Time now for Biography for Radio with Jack Perkins. Brought to you locally by the Cedars and East-West Partners Community.
He was a star of his sport, but one victory was so controversial, 100 riot guards stood by as he arrived in South Korea. His story next on Biography for Radio.
Attention college graduates, did you know that with one simple call to College Loan Corporation, you can cut your student loan payments by almost 50%, lock in one low rate, and start earning up to a $2,000 cash rebate? That's right. College Loan Corporation is a nationwide leading student loan provider, offering 24/7 personalized service and innovative solutions for your specific situation. We've helped over 600,000 people like you. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE today. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
As a boy, he was on the chubby side. He was raised solely by his divorced and devoted father, a Japanese-born hairdresser. The boy was talented in sports, and when he was 14, his father sent him to train in speed skating in New York State. But the anxious youngster rebelled and deliberately missed his plane. His father discovered his ruse, put him on another plane, and sat next to him all the way. After 6 months of training, the teenager was winning championships. He was the youngest American to win a World Cup in his sport. And in 2002, he took gold at the Salt Lake City Winter Olympics. But his victory came only after his South Korean rival was disqualified. Korean fans were furious when the American skater next visited South Korea. Riot police had to guard him at the airport. In 2006, fans held their breath as he made a poor start at the Winter Olympics in Turin, Italy. When he crossed the finish line in front in the 500-meter race, he threw up his arms and let out a scream of delight, shared by millions of Americans watching the Olympic gold-winning speed skater, Apollo Anton Ono. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by The Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at The Cedars of Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.C. Martin is brought to you by Crook's Corner, home of Shrimp and Grits, and Bill Smith's Seasoned in the South menu. Join us at 610 West Franklin. Daily menu at crookscorner.com.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. We're talking about a production at Memorial Hall of Drought and Rain, a production by a Vietnamese choreographer named Ia Sola, known worldwide, and this is the U.S. premiere. And Emil Kang, I think you're proud of having this production at Memorial Hall.
I think, DG, you have been a great advocate of helping me convey to our community the importance of this work. Mm-hmm. I think, and I'm sure many people won't agree with me, but artistic work is not simply meant to entertain. And you don't actually have to agree or like the work to value it.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm trying to also, in my mind, separate that from within my own taste, because I think it's important not to have something that just what Emil Kang likes. That's not, who cares? It's much more, I think, when why the chancellor invited me to come was much more about the reach out into the world and to the artistic world in general, and mm-hmm. trying to find the most relevant and interesting and innovative artists of today. And so in that sense, as we get Caroline to develop our name, I'm happy to say I was just at a conference in Nashville last weekend at Vanderbilt University, and all of the major privates and publics were represented. But people are noticing the work we're doing, and so that, of course, made me very proud.
We're beginning to get a reputation as being a place where you can see these avant-garde is not the right word, but provocative pieces, and pieces that are out of the tradition, in addition to seeing the traditional and the other things.
You have to remember that it is just a very, very thin thread that's woven through this much larger, more traditional fabric of classical artists, of popular artists, of jazz artists, of Alvin Ailey.
So well, there's some of us who like to be followers and to go into the, and that's most of us. I mean, we like to go in pathways that people have explored and can give us certificates that this is going to be good for us. There are others of us who like to be explorers and who like to reach out, try something different. You know, even if we don't like it, I want to be the one who's seen this. And I'm just judging that this is this kind of production. This is the kind of production you want to see if you want to see what's going on in the rest of the world, and try out your own qualities of judgment.
You know, in some ways, it's anyone who has children, I would say, because I have a young daughter, DG, as you know, should be interested in this. You know, this is in Vietnam, the first generation of, I think the first full generation of Vietnamese who didn't grow up at all during the war. And so what does that mean to them? And how about people who did live through it? What does that change in generations mean? And, of course, that can be applied in any sense, in any culture around the world. And in that sense, what do we do to pass on that memory, the history? What part of it is kept? What part of it is forgotten? I think we all have a stake in that.
Yeah. Well, Rivka, you wanted to say something, I know, about your experience. You're the only one of us who's met this incredibly interesting woman who's brought this production together, Iosola.
Yeah.
And so give you the last word.
Well, I just, in thinking about why this work is so important and what this work is trying to do, I think it's about, it can reach into many different people's lives, old and young. It's a modern piece, but it's remembering the past, the Vietnamese past, and also, you know, transnational pasts. It's remembering war and violence within this very present and modern world, where there are lots of distractions and things keeping us from remembering, I think Iosola would say, that our connections and responsibilities to one another. And so this piece is about memory. Memory in terms of history, so memory over time, but also remembering our sort of global connections with other people and remembering other kinds of wars and violence going on right now. And that's, when I was talking to her in Hue, that was really one of the primary things she wanted to emphasize. That's what she asked her dancers to do in their training. She asked them to really come to grips and address contemporary issues, but with an idea that they do that through reckoning and remembering a past that they didn't personally live through, but that they nonetheless can sense and feel. And so that's, she said to me, you don't have to have crossed war or experienced war directly to be able to feel, to be able to, she said, take consciousness and believe that there are other ways, that war and violence are not inevitable, right? Well, that we can do other things.
I wish we didn't have to end. You're passionate. And Eric, Rivka Eisner and Emil Kang have been telling us about the upcoming production in Memorial Hall of Drought and Rain, the U.S. premiere, this Thursday and Friday. Thanks for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
Carolina Performing Arts proudly presents one of the oldest established touring Shakespeare companies in the world, Actors from the London Stage. Now in their 13th year, Actors from the London Stage have begun their fall university tour, and they're bringing their enriching performing arts program to the Kenan Theater and UNC Center for Dramatic Art. Witness the prestigious troupe present Shakespeare's Hamlet, the story of a young man's quest to seek revenge after the death of his father. Be there in the Kenan Theater for the 7:30 showtime on Thursday or at 8 p.m. on Friday. The show will also be performed on Saturday at 2 o'clock. It's the Actors from the London Stage performance of Hamlet at the Kenan Theater and UNC's Center for Dramatic Arts. Get your tickets today. Visit carolinaperformingarts.org or call the Memorial Hall box office at 843-3333. That's 843-3333.